Run it again. I know that we're looking at this data, and it's important to look at this data and find some things and themes in the data. But I'm wondering if we all needed to, and maybe everyone else did, but we need to establish where we're going with it. Are we publishing it? If we are, we all need the IRB. If at least that's my understanding. I don't know that we all did that. And have a more uniform way of distributing the instruments so that that's not a variable in our responses. I was thinking that when we did this in December, it was, let's see what we can get. Let's just put out there what we can and see some responses and get some feedback. I don't know that we really thought we would be at this point saying, oh, let's take this data now, with the exception of Neurazo, because Neurazo just did it a couple weeks ago. She was able to do it. But I know that when I was giving it out, I was thinking, okay, well, any data we can get now is a good start because, you know, it's right at the end of the semester. I think there was 2 weeks left in the semester, et cetera. So I don't know if we want to rework it. I was just thinking about that, too, and I was feeling like, okay, why was I so clear in that IRB statement about it would only be shared with our members? I got that somewhere from our discussions. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you guys think?
I was reflecting on some variability between how we administered it, because I know some people gave it as part. I think Aisha, you said you gave it at the end of a test.
Yes.
And then I gave mine like during the lab, and I'm like, hey, please take a minute and help me out, which probably, you know, so we had people with different motives taking it and probably in different thoughts. So I had several students who just didn't bother to fill in reasons or just were rushing through and just didn't answer things. So where different motivations, such as extra credit, would encourage everyone to respond. So I was thinking about gave the instrument. I mean, we still have to analyze what we have here, but if the next time we give the instrument, we have more controlled circumstances.
Do you think that we would have enough time to do that and still analyze it to present to JSM, or do we not even need to do that? Do we just summarize and say this is our research group? We're coming from these different universities and colleges, and this is what we're doing. Do we have to get into that detail? And if we don't have to get into that detail, then we can just do all this for ourselves and then, yeah, do it again in May. Aisha, you had written up the abstract. What were your thoughts on that?
Again, when I wrote the abstract, based on the outline that Bob gave to all research groups in terms of what should be in the abstract. He had explicitly said paragraph one, paragraph two, and paragraph three. I guess from my standpoint, it's a bit of a non-issue in the sense that this is a pilot, and we will be reporting pilot data. The pilot data showed, you know, suggested X, Y, Z, and therefore in the fall, we will do X, Y, Z. I don't see necessarily that, and I think I said this the last time, I don't see that we're pulling out the individual student data, that we would be pulling out the individual student data. And even if that is the case, like Bob is talking about, I think he said in his email that we should have examples of each of the different, that fall under each of the different categories. We can simply exclude or make sure that we do not choose or include any of Jennifer's students' responses if she's uncomfortable with that. But I guess
we wouldn't really be reporting, you know, I mean, if we just going to report according to what Bob has written, just here are the themes that came out of the responses.
That's right. That's what I was under the impression that we were going to do.
That seems so general that it could be from, you know, it doesn't really identify who the students are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I don't anticipate, I mean, I've never given research a research talk where I've explicitly said, or where it's been explicitly said, maybe at a teaching conference, but for most conferences, I don't know that it is explicitly said, it's students from these four colleges. Usually it says, you know, it's students from a liberal arts university in the south, you know, southeast,
yeah,
or something like that. So that's why I was thinking that it would not be an issue. But in terms of the process, my understanding was that this is the pilot data, and we're using the pilot data just to give us a better sense of what we're seeing. And then when we actually, you know, decide what we're looking for, establish some sort of baseline to look for, then I was under the impression that we would be administering this again in the fall.
Okay.
And then those results would be publishable.
Yeah, so those ones are the ones we'll need the IRB for, because those...
Right, where you'd have the, you know, you'd have the numbers and, you know, you really want to crank out. But for, in terms of when I look at, I think of the presentation, say, okay, we did a pilot with 87 students from a variety of schools.
Okay.
Right? It doesn't necessarily mean, I don't know, I guess that's just how
That's kind of how I was thinking you would present it, you know, just very general overview of this
is
what we're working on.
Yeah, here are some of the themes that we saw. Do you see what I mean?
And so far, this is what we've seen, and we're going to refine it further for, you know,
right. And here's how
the study, and then at that point. So some of the things that Georgette was talking about, you know, those are the kinds of things that we would address.
We would control for. I mean, because honestly, we have to do this in a pre-post.
Mm-hmm.
We can't actually just do this as a post-test,
mm-hmm,
right? Because we have to establish some baseline. So there's no way that this is even publishable in
a
larger sense.
Agreed? But, you know, because we just, I mean, I think by having these themes, we can get a better sense of how to structure, you know, the pre-post instrument that we're going to use.
Because it is a pilot,
yeah.
And I guess that that's how I thought of it. But then
uh-huh.
when we were looking at the actual data and we were breaking it down, and when Bob was saying, especially in his email today, that kind of made me a little nervous again, that he said, well, we need examples of phrases and statements. And I'm thinking, now we're taking, are we taking their actual statements, and is that what's going to be in our paper? Because
because if you give themes, you usually have to give examples of what students are saying.
Yeah.
So again,
if we look at the themes from the four of us and we agree on, because I noticed that we don't phrase it the same, or
uh-huh.
but if we find themes in common, then in giving those examples, we can give examples of students that are not from your school, Jennifer, so then that way at least they're protected, and you're protected too under your IRB.
Yeah. I don't think that my students would even care. I don't think that at all. It's just the fact that had I known that, I would have put right on there, you know, we're going to present this at a conference. I mean, I was sitting right next to the woman in the IRB, and I said, she says, well, are you going to publish this? And I said, no. She goes, are you going to present this at a conference? And I said, not the pilot results. I said, we're going to do this again. We're just getting a feel for her. And right then I had the opportunity, yes, we are going to present this at a conference.
Oh, I was always under the impression that we would be presenting the pilot results at the conference.
Me too.
The emails that
I didn't.
With that though, Jennifer? If we just don't,
I'm sorry.
Would you be comfortable if we simply just don't take any of your student responses? I mean, your responses were at the very end, and at least for my questions, by the time I got to there, I mean, you had a lot of non-responses on my question, but by the time we got to your student questions, there were things that I had already seen other places.
Yep.
Do you see what I mean? So we could definitely pull examples from other people's classes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all. Because I think that would be playing it safe on this end. But I'm just a little frustrated with myself with not understanding it the right way, and I wish that I had set it up differently. I think that I felt rushed by the process because it was the first time for me to sit down with IRB, and I had to, you know, as you guys do too, most likely, you know, come up with the format and
mm-hmm.
administer it or give it back to them and have them approve it. And
right.
So it was a rushed process. Okay, so we'll just maybe just eliminate. I don't think I even had that many there. I only had 15 responses. And again, if we're looking for data, I have 50 this semester. And I just feel like I could do such a better job, but We can talk about that later.
There won't be enough time for us to, do anything as far, at least from where I sit.
Yeah, I won't have enough time either just to, for us to come up with, okay, these are the common themes and refine the questions and all those other confounding variables that we have to try and make it as uniform
That's
as
right.
possible.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that I might, I don't know how you feel about this, but if we remove my data, and if I do it again in April and I go through the same process maybe with yours and put in some statements and put in some, add to the themes that are already there just to solidify it.
I honestly don't see, at least, I don't see any new themes evolving from your students only is what
okay.
I am saying. The themes that I saw on my question from your students were themes that I had seen before.
Okay.
So that I don't see that.
I'm feeling a little left out.
But you're still using your data.
I'm just kidding.
I saw the same thing. I used Aisha's reporting as a model for how I reported my summary,
mm-hmm.
and I even had some of the exact, same wording,
right.
Identifying the null, testing the null
mm-hmm.
or testing
mm-hmm.
the alternative or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll be okay.
Okay. All right.
And don't worry, it's all our data now. All of the data belongs to all of us. So
yeah.
Don't feel left out.
Okay.
And you don't really want to have too many themes anyway. I think,
Right.
4 or 5 is good. Okay. I had some things that I thought we were going to do today.
Okay.
Talk about, since we wanted to talk about the readings,
mm-hmm.
My thought was to kind of look at what are some key points that we got from the readings,
mm-hmm.
and then how do those intersect with what we do and with our topic?
Right.
How do they inform our topic, and then figure out where do we go from there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I actually I went in Joan's the chapter from Joan's book, and every time there was a place where a person was referenced, I went to the references and I copied and pasted the reference into one document.
Mm-hmm.
And I made that document and I can send it to everyone. I don't know if you guys did the same type of thing, but I thought that it definitely targeted exactly what we're studying, and we could pick up our readings from there. Perhaps.
I would like to see that if you could send
that.
Yeah,
that would be great.
I will send that.
I found that the other four articles were saying the same thing over and
yeah.
over, and then I realized why. It's the same people writing
mm-hmm.
it. But what I found interesting was just the three levels of variability that they were talking about.
Right.
That I usually don't make that distinction very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of interesting. Or maybe I need to make that decision very clearly. And also the decision of looking at singular reason versus distributional reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like in these articles they're talking about here are some roadblocks to why people don't get this. Why students struggle with understanding the concept of statistical inference. So I thought, well, that's something that we could use, too, just the, what are the roadblocks that get in the way of people understanding p-value, and how can we then address those? So I thought, it's kind of a very broad model of how to approach our own topic.
I thought the Saldana and Thompson article started off with a lot of previous research that really touches on ours, some of which we've read already, but this idea that, and I noticed these in some of the responses that I saw, drawing a broad conclusion from the case at hand rather than thinking about the, you know, the distribution,
mm-hmm.
you know, a sampling distribution. I don't know if that's something we can test or whatever, but I did notice that.
Had any of you read any of that Joan Garfield's book and Danny Benzavi's book before this?
I had.
I found it amazing, and I wish that maybe we had started with this book and the references in this book 4 months ago. It just really picked up on so many of the themes that we've been talking about. And as I'm reading through, I was like, wow, I think I've read that article. I think someone in our group has read that article, and there were so many there that I think we started the search kind of just out there, and this was very, very focused. It was neat. I thought it was very well organized and really a great place to branch off from.
I had two lists going from it. One, research ideas. One, things to try in my class.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. So did reference some of the chaos questions that we used some of those. Did that spark anything for anybody?
Yeah, kind of felt like that, you know, it was kind of what we had. Well, I guess since we got that from Bob and he's part of this whole approach, it's not surprising that, you know, we're already asked some of those questions specifically about p-values.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think where we want to end up is, okay, why do students not get this? And how do we know what they get, you know, based on how they respond to questions? And how can we make it so that they understand it? You know, if we know where the roadblocks are, then we can figure out how to remove them.
But I guess first step is figuring out what the roadblocks are.
Yeah, which is what, you know, the pilot is trying to get at that. If we
mm-hmm.
look at the students and we see how they responded to those questions,
mm-hmm.
we can get a sense that, well, they don't really understand, you know, when they reject the null hypothesis, they don't know what that actually means.
Mm-hmm.
Or why are we
doing
that? What
do you think
that?
It means, X?
Yeah. So in some of the responses that I got, people would get the right answer and they would actually write, that's the answer, I don't really know why.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm. I was intrigued by, I'm looking at your results right now, Nierato, and the unclear and rambling. I mean, there were some half and half correct, half wrong. I don't know what this person is, where this reasoning is going. It was confusing to read some of their responses.
It seems like they'll just talk and hope that
they hit on something.
Yeah.
And I couldn't follow what, like, what are you saying?
Yeah. Oh, good. It wasn't just me, because I did that a couple times. I was like, what is this? No idea.
The RPAS questions. They came from, I don't know her first name, but it's Lane Gattaz?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the last name?
Uh-huh.
She was also referenced within that chapter.
Right.
Her article was called, or actually they referred to her having a visual diagram to
mm-hmm.
help in reasoning for statistical inference, and I want to remember that maybe that was part of the RPAS that Arika had sent to us. Is
uh-huh.
that? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Bob's email, and one thing he said, I encourage you to start putting together examples of explanations that fit different categories. I wasn't sure that we had created, I guess we did create different categories, but I think maybe we need to agree. Should we start thinking about agreeing on that, on what the categories are? How consistent were our, you know, responses, do you think, between the three studies?
You know, I suspect that we're probably seeing the same thing, but saying it differently.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if we more clearly describe what that is, we might find that what I'm calling, you know, rambling or whatever, somebody else has called it something different. So we can have, like, this is the theme and this is what we mean when we say rambling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's what he's talking about. So we can have, instead of having four sets of themes, we can just have four themes or however many,
mm-hmm.
and know what we mean when we use those.
And I tried to give examples, you know, where of what I meant,
mm-hmm.
Except where it was, you know, explicit, like incorrect null hypothesis is pretty explicit.
Mm-hmm.
But everywhere else, pretty much, most of what you see are things that I listed, just parts of examples, you know, that I listed from different different statements.
I listed a theme, and I don't think that I saw it on I think it was the nature of my question, and that's why I saw this theme, but I don't know if any of you have seen it also. But I saw problems with just changing fractions to decimals to percents,
mm-hmm.
Saying that they were confusing the sample size with the p-value was 0.048. So they were saying that, you know, 81 students is not the same as 48 out of 1,000. The thousands place means that 1,000 students were in the sample. So there was a definite confusion between the actual
p-value as a probability and p-value as a percentage of people.
Yes, and someone else said, no, it's not a percent, it's a measure of the error. It's the chance that the observation's not true.
Well, that's what I have as incorrect interpretation of the probability.
Okay,
okay. So
the third bullet.
Okay.
So, for instance, they interpreted p-value as decreased vision loss for 4 in 100 people,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, it is not. It's not related directly to, you know, 100 people or whatever it may be. And they talked about 4% uncertainty or chance, 4% as the error that occurs. So that's my bullet number 3. So I did also see that.
Let me find that.
Yeah, so that would be my number 4. That's where I grouped that in there.
Oh, I see it. Incorrect interpretation.
But I think, Narazu, I wonder if we want to pull that out because I think it's a big issue. You know what I mean? Instead of using it as miscellaneous wrong answer. I see you have P here as percentage of people.
It was when I saw some answers like that, it was almost I just finished teaching probability in my beginner class, and it was almost as if they were thinking about a coin flipping activity. You know what I mean? Not even a decision process or using a p-value in a decision process. They were thinking of just strict probability.
Yeah, and that's related kind of to the articles that we read, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they're talking about thinking about a sample. When they're doing the sampling distributions, they're linking it, trying to link it back to individuals or a frequency count type of thing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I definitely would like to put that on our short list for right now as major themes or themes in common. What do you guys think?
Yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think we all have that one.
Yeah.
How do we want to write
it up? With all the slightly different things, like it was the same thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of breaking up. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like how you have it there, Aisha, as your third bullet under question one.
Yeah.
And then maybe we can just all add to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe just put in a list format. It would be statements that were taken from our real questions. I'm sorry, that's my phone.
So should we just kind of go through
the themes?
The themes that I have question one in front of me, Aisha, so we'll just go off yours, if that's okay, and just see if we have the same ones and ones that we might have and are not on that list and see if
we
want to add them on, so we can end up with one list of themes.
That sounds good. Who's the recorder?
I'm the recorder.
Okay. Well, just let us know if we're going too quickly.
I'm getting general. You know, now I'm writing down the themes that we're going to decide on.
Yeah.
So I have, we're going to, I don't know if y'all agreed to this yet, but I'm looking at the third bullet under question one, and we will use that as the title of our first theme.
Or for right now, as a possible theme. I imagine that this would be kind of a, you know, process where we have to, once we go through all of them again, we can go through it again and try to see if we can combine.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Themes.
I'll call
so
it
forth.
Possible themes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can have a table with, here's the themes, here's a description of what it is, and here's an example of what it looks
right.
like.
Okay.
And I think once, what Naira just said also, so that once we do come up, decide on some themes, three or four or five, as she said, then we can each go ahead, I don't know if it's Naira who said this, and maybe add in some examples from our different questions.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Naira, go for it.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to find our list, and then once we have our list and agree on the themes, then we're going to put in some examples.
Right.
Right.
From each of our questions, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Okay, so the first one we have is incorrect null hypothesis. So this is just they did not understand what it was.
Right.
They actually took the claim that, you know, the drug was effective, or in other questions where we're looking at the reading as being, I think it was a reading program or something, as being effective. They took that to be the null hypothesis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I guess
you have that as a theme, and so does Georgette.
Yeah, I actually worked off of her list. Mm-hmm. So.
But Narazu, you said something that I had not thought about, and I think you're right. It's not specifically that. I think what happened, it sounds like, is that they took the original claim to automatically be the null.
Yeah, so they, whatever, so, you know, they don't understand the difference
right.
between what mm-hmm. you're testing and what you're interested in.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
So are we identifying that as a theme, or are we still just working through that?
Just for right now, probably. I think let's just compile as many that have multiple people saying the same thing.
Okay, so the incorrect null hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
And also, along with that, that the idea of what they're testing, of the claim versus...
It's like a failure to distinguish between the alternative hypothesis and the null hypothesis.
Yeah, it's the same as incorrect null. It's the same as...
Right.
It's just one theme.
Yes. But I was just going to elaborate a little bit so we
mm-hmm.
were clear on it when we see it.
Right.
So the incorrect null hypothesis, failure to distinguish between the null and the alternative.
Right.
Or using the original claim as the null. Yeah.
Using original claim.
Okay, so it looks like...
Okay.
I think we also that we might have phrased it differently. And the...
Right.
Second one on here is misconceptions about the word extreme.
Did anyone else? There was another question I think that had the word extreme in it.
The word extreme? Is that what you said?
I had some. I think I had somebody saying that. I'm kind of going off the memory here. I think I have somebody saying, well, the p-value has nothing to do with the extreme effectiveness or something
uh-huh,
like that.
Uh-huh. But again, this
not recognizing that the p-value indicates like evidence in support of or...
Mm-hmm.
They don't seem to recognize that, well, in some of the questions.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to hold that one for now?
I think let's, for some of the issues that came up with that one may come up in other themes.
Right. Because, I mean, I think it's important to come back to, because that is the number one was the definition question.
Mm-hmm.
And if students are having problems with doing, I think that's the big issue. You know what I mean? Of the standard definition. But we can hold that one for now and come back to it, I think.
Okay. So we've already talked about the third bullet there.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go to the fourth one, and I think we all have this one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So where they have a conclusion, but it doesn't, the reasoning doesn't match
mm-hmm.
their conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to all of them. Yeah, I think all four of us have that one.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you had it worded, Jennifer, I think is it's easy to understand. Incorrect reasoning with correct choice. And sometimes I saw the reverse, too, that they had the wrong choice, but if they'd had the right choice, the explanation would have matched it. But they had the wrong choice, so it didn't match. So there was a mismatch there of the reasoning and the choice selected.
Yeah, I didn't even think to look for that. Was there a lot of that? I should go back. Is there some way we want to code that? Or?
Yeah, I actually coded mine. I just didn't type it on there.
Okay.
But I coded correct. Correct, wrong, correct, other, then wrong, correct, wrong, other.
Yeah.
And in the other category were people who, the other category were the no responses or just things that were really just really cryptic, that
yeah,
I couldn't get anything from, like p-value is not extrapolated data. What does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
That was different from correct, wrong.
Yeah, it's like
so,
talking about.
I know.
It's a good word.
I say that a lot when I'm grading papers. What are you talking about?
They're like, were you in my class?
I know. I kept thinking, oh, God, I'm a horrible teacher.
And then you get the one student who gets it exactly right. And
I know. It's like,
so I have written, I can write it two ways. I have it two ways down here. You tell me which one you want.
Mm-hmm.
Inappropriate conclusion where the reasoning doesn't match.
Mm-hmm.
Or inappropriate reasoning with the correct choice and vice versa. Or
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I like the second way because
mm-hmm.
it's clear what you're talking about.
Inappropriate reasoning with the correct choice and I'm just going to say vice versa.
Incorrect reasoning with the correct choice and vice versa.
Okay, good. And then I just have a question, should we code? I'm thinking that a lot of that is just guessing.
Yeah. And it's hard to tell because if they guess, and well, I guess not.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Never mind. That doesn't make sense what I was thinking.
Well, have you ever given a question where you're talking about, you're trying to indicate if there's independence or not, and they'll say the correct reasoning, but they'll say, no, they're not independent?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I find that all the time. It's the words are confusing to them. So they have the correct concept. They're just, or even if they say, oh, that's a really small p-value, that means you don't reject the null hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
So they, yeah, they just switched it. Yes, which is wrong, but.
Which is, you wonder, did they understand it or did they memorize some rule and now they've remembered it wrong?
Exactly, and that's what we were talking about the 0.05 as well. I'm wondering if they're just memorizing that, and that's just okay. So we have three themes so far.
Okay. So then the last one on the last bullet here is identifying p-value as small.
Mm-hmm.
So they just.
And I think that probably kind of goes into. Goes with what Jennifer was saying just now in terms of they have, or maybe not, because I have had students say to me, I think I did something wrong on my calculator because the p-value is, very small or very large. And I don't know if they have some sort of threshold in their head about what the p-value should be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also tied into this, okay, the p-value is small, so what does that actually mean? and them not understanding it.
Sort of piggyback off what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
is that I was thinking about while I was looking over this, is thinking, how does someone decide, what are we using for alpha? I mean, you know, I mean, shouldn't, isn't some variability, I mean, if it was a medical experiment, I would prefer 0.01, you know, if I were going to be taking that medication, I would prefer to have, you know, a much smaller level of significance. So the variability, I don't know where I'm going with this. I think just more explanation as to why they're calling it small would be interesting. Like, how many people actually put an alpha to compare it to?
I go both ways on my questions on tests. I think when you get to step two, it's more of a they get it, they understand what's small, but in step one they don't. They really need a number to go with.
And this trend, it could also be, and that's why I was hesitant to put this one on there, because it could be a teaching style, because where I saw that was with NIRADS's responses. And I think it must be that it's stressed in class,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you're looking to see whether or not your p-value is small, or if the p-value is not high, p-value is low, small p-value. There were just so many people saying it. So it could be a stylistic thing.
Yeah, and I don't teach the class, so I don't know,
I know
what they
right.
mean.
Oh, it wasn't your students, that's right.
Right. So, I mean, I was even iffy about that last theme, but again, if almost everyone within that section was saying it, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of them still not coming to the right conclusion. I think it is going back to then the inappropriate conclusions or conclusions not matching. So.
Yeah, I have it listed as partially correct reasoning, but many responses indicated that p-value is very small and you should reject the null hypothesis, but then they didn't match that up correctly with what the,
mm-hmm,
the question
mm-hmm.
was saying. They were
mm-hmm.
not interpreting
right.
p-value in the same way as that, yes, it's small, you reject the null hypothesis, and then they came to the wrong conclusion. So.
Right.
Is that a matter of an incorrect null? I mean, I noticed a lot of, you know, reject the null, but they were actually rejecting...
They
stated the alternative
null.
As the null.
Could be interrelated. It could be related.
So
mm-hmm.
that's something we need to think about when we're coding. We'll try to figure out what we're thinking. You know,
well, that kind of goes back up to the second. Well, I don't know. I think the second one where we were saying incorrect null hypothesis, the failure to distinguish between the null and the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then the reasoning beyond that is also flawed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right, because if you have an incorrect null hypothesis, and then more than likely you will have some, you know, reach some sort of incorrect conclusion.
Right, because you're
and
associating a lower p-value with
right
rejecting
place,
the null hypothesis.
Right.
But that's not
you
what
no
the, that's not what you're actually rejecting, because that's not what you call the null hypothesis.
Right.
Let me ask this question, if I may. Speaking of the claim and the null and the alternative, I've come across a couple different ways that textbooks approach that. And one textbook says that, you know, the claim can go in either the null or the alternative,
mm-hmm.
And you need to be careful with that. But in general, whatever the researcher is trying to show should go in the alternative.
Right.
Every other book that I've read says the claim should be in the alternative because that's what you're trying to show evidence
right.
for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way that I learned is that the null hypothesis has an equal sign. If
yeah.
the claim does not have an equal sign, it's not a null.
And the old book
did. Well,
that
gets tricky when you're doing a one-tailed test, though.
Yeah, it used to be just in the opposite direction. So if
right.
it wasn't an equal, I mean, that's the way I show them all equals
mm-hmm.
equality in the null hypothesis, but the older books will show less than or equal to, and
right.
then the
and
alternative will
I
be
teach.
Greater than.
Right.
That's what I teach.
When you look at your null and your alternative, they should cover all possible outcomes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've always
thought
of the alternative as the claim because, I mean, people are not claiming that my teaching method's not going to work. I mean, usually people are claiming that it's going to make a difference. And then the null hypothesis, I always think of it as the initial assumption that you start off with, which is, you know, there's nothing going on here. There's no difference.
No effect, right? No difference.
Yeah.
I don't think they're always worded that way.
No.
Because when I was reading the John's article, they called the claim the null hypothesis. They referred to the null hypothesis as a claim. So.
Now, I read that differently, I think. Did I write that down?
Because on page 278, talks about the p-value is described as an indicator of how convincing the evidence is against the claim, and then in parentheses they have null hypothesis. And they keep doing that. Like, the further it is in the tail, the more we are convinced that the null hypothesis, in parentheses, claim, is false.
Oh, yeah, they are doing that.
Oh, yes, but look what they said on 277. They clearly say their null the null hypothesis is discussed as an idea of no difference.
Yeah.
So in their class, they specifically say your null means no difference, and that's the only option that they're using.
Okay.
So my guess is as they formulate their questions in class, they formulate their claims around their null.
Mm-hmm.
But in my textbooks, that doesn't happen. And I don't know that it really happens in real life all the time.
Yeah, I think it seems to me that people start with the alternative. That's what they're interested in. And that's what they believe they're going to be able to reject the null hypothesis. Otherwise, in fact, there'll be no point in doing an experiment or anything like that, because if you don't expect to reject the null hypothesis, so what's the point?
I think it's just, an individual
approaches. And I think as long as, how you're using the term, like they're doing in that article, that they say null hypothesis is claim, so, in their article, that's what they're referring to when they say the claim, then, I think that's, as long as it's clear what they're talking about.
I think in this case here, so they were talking about an experiment. They were asking students, what do you think the proportion is going to be? And that was that the student's claim was 0.5. So I think that would be really confusing to teach. I think it'd be confusing to teach that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wouldn't teach it that way. I would teach that as a status quo or whatever.
If you go with the
That's not. So they're not using it as a technical, but they're just telling us, the readers, that the claim that the students made is actually the null hypothesis. Sounds like that they, the students were asked, how many times do you think you get heads?
It's certainly confusing.
I guess I don't see this as being anything different from what I teach, because no difference is simply an equal sign, which must go into null.
But when you look at that part, that's not confusing, because here they say that, there's no difference. But it's just when they use null hypothesis and they put claim in parentheses.
I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
But after Georgette said that, I can see that, they're talking about the claim that
the student made, right.
In this particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put the equality in the null, which is what I do as well, do you also talk about if it's a one-sided test?
I do.
That it could be equal or anything in the opposite
direction.
So it includes
everything. And my students actually have three options for null. So we do less than or equal to, equals, or greater than or equal to.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And because that helps them with their alternative and helps them with the tails of their test and so forth.
Okay.
I know a lot of books now are simply doing equals always, and they may have an alternative as less than or greater than or whatever.
I have a book like that right now, Aisha, and it confuses my students who have learned statistics in high school, and they're like, why is it an equal sign? What about,
Exactly.
So I don't like to use it.
And I actually just tell them to, ignore it, because one of our books, that's what I have to do. I said, they're just saying it's always equal, but because, I'm trying to make my students, just more aware, consumers of statistics, basically.
Right.
I don't need to be confusing them.
Mm-hmm.
I still have students who don't know that okay, the complement of greater than or equal to is less than. I don't want to be confusing them with just an equal sign and then them having to figure out the alternative. So
I think the equality helps them when they do sketch also that they're thinking of, all right, this is the distribution that we're going with until we have evidence against it.
Right.
So if we're testing mu equals 5, then 5 is what's the mean,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going, you know, how unlikely are these results if that's true?
Right.
So I think in the case of equality, that may be why it's it's equals in the books. And, okay, I was just curious. I think that might be a source of confusion for students as well, depending on how they learned it. Okay, so we have four themes.
Looks like Georgia.
Jennifer, do we have three themes then?
Four.
Yeah.
Are we going to still go with the identifying p-value as small?
No, because I didn't think it was really a I think it was part of the incorrect.
Okay, so we're gonna put that under the failure to distinguish between the null and all the alternatives. Got it.
Okay. I looked at Georgette. Georgette, you kind of stuck to the model that I had in Iratsu. Did you have any additional themes that we didn't pick up on yet?
Some of the things that I have kind of fall in the same. Because
can you tell us those?
I had some students who would say, would associate a lower p-value with rejecting the null hypothesis but not give a reason why.
Right.
They'll just say, well, p is less than 0.05, so reject the null hypothesis. And then I also had some who did the opposite, like they'll associate higher p-values with a significant effect. So I'm not sure what to call that because that's just wrong.
Right.
You would put that into the heading of wrong. Wrong, invalid, false.
Right. So that kind of goes into one of the other themes also, right?
Yeah.
How about you, Jennifer? Let me pull up yours.
I think that...
But Jennifer's in front of me, and I think I think all three of them are the same three that we have.
Yep, I agree. I was amazed that first one that I have, the difficulty with making sense of numbers. I have written down, I think, 10 examples.
Yes.
10 to 15 examples of things that they wrote that, oh, my goodness.
Yep.
P-value is the number of standard deviations away. It seems too small. Out of 81, it's 0.048. And
But you know what I find so interesting? It almost sounds to me like students take definitions in the context of the chapter that they're working in.
Yeah.
So that, you know, when they learned probability earlier on, I know I say the p-value is a probability, they just don't make, somehow or the other, they miss it, you know, because I had one student who said on one of the questions, I think the one where it was like 48 and 1,000 or whatever else, right? And they were like, well, the p-value, you know, 48 and 1,000 isn't correct because that's not a probability. A probability has to be like point something. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know.
But, you know, our math teachers, the class that they my students take before they come to my class is in the math department, and they tell them probability should always be expressed as a decimal.
Yeah.
And, like, to get them to do percentages is just like pulling teeth.
Pulling teeth.
And part of them thought about it as the degree of effectiveness. Like, let's say the degrees, you have this, Aisha, in your notes here. Degrees effective 96% of the time.
Yeah.
Because the p-value was 0.04. So it's just, I think,
kind of scary. Yeah. I think it's also
again, it's where they are applying the probability to.
Yeah.
They're not applying it to, you know, observing the, you know, results such as these. You know, they're really
likelihood of
back.
Getting that result.
Yeah.
They're looking at it just to be a percentage of something.
On the individuals, yes.
I know my test questions are like this. I wonder if yours are, where there's the whole context of the story.
Yeah.
You know, with the sample mean and the sample proportion or whatever, that maybe the question, I know we're not going to rework the questions, but maybe the question throws them a little bit because they're so used to going through a whole process of, you know, figuring out a critical value or just figuring out the p-value.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I told you guys I went to a teaching and learning center, and I spoke to them about that, and I said, look, my students do not multiple choice, number one. And number two, they tend to have a lot more information than this.
Mm-hmm.
But what he said is, okay, what is the point of, you know, having all students do intro statistics? Well, so they can go out there and be consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no guarantee out there that the problems are going to be written exactly as we write them on tests.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's almost like it shouldn't matter.
Okay.
If they fundamentally
I think that's the drive for,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
into statistical reasoning and statistical
mm-hmm.
literacy. So if you understand it well enough,
right.
you can be in a different context and you can recognize that we're talking about the same thing.
I still maintain that we need to cut our students a lot of slack because we are expecting them to get pretty deep concepts in a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's,
really.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think it's really a function of what we're putting at them.
Right.
The very end of this, well...
Yeah,
the last month of the semester when everything else is pretty heavy.
It's pretty heavy,
well.
Exactly. So it looks like we have about 7 minutes. Should we go?
We need to figure out when are we meeting next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My preference would be for, because we have spring break coming up, and I don't really want to meet over spring break.
Nope.
I bet our spring breaks are different, though.
Mine is the 14th, 15th.
Mine is the very last week of March.
Okay. Anyone have anyone 21st, 22nd, 23rd that week?
Do we have, let me ask this, is it imperative that we meet on Fridays? Like, could we do Mondays or Wednesdays instead?
I guess we can do whatever, you know, works for us.
Okay.
I have a 5:15 class on Lilith class on Monday and Wednesday, so I couldn't. I could probably pull off 4:00.
No, but you see, if it's not Fridays, it doesn't have to be 4:00. It can be like 2:00.
Okay.
On a Monday.
Okay.
That
and
works
I'm
going to
be really selfish and suggest the 29th.
Of March. Yeah, obviously. Not going to be February.
Does that work for you?
29th.
March 29th.
I could cut short my spring break.
Oh, you have spring break. No, let's not.
No, that's fine. I'm just kidding. I'm going to be in the office anyway. I live here.
We could do it the Wednesday.
No, I think Monday is good because Wednesday I have a class.
Okay.
So
that's 2 p.m. Eastern
uh-huh.
time
okay.
on Monday, March 29th.
Uh-huh.
Going to make me do the math, aren't you? I think that's better my time.
No, Rasu, we always make you do the math.
I get done at 1:50 teaching, so I'll be. I should. If I'm a little late, it's just I'm getting
okay.
there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll just talk about you till you get.
Excellent. Perfect. Sure. Leave me out. That's okay. Don't left out. So our roles for next time. Let's see. We got organizer, synthesizer, moderator, recorder.
I think I should be synthesis.
I don't have my sheet in front of me. Hang on.
Oh, I can look.
Today I was the recorder, Niratsa was the moderator, Aisha, organizer, Georgette, synthesizer, but they're now in no order. Does anybody have the rotation?
Not handy, but if somebody else has it. Wait here.
But all you have to do, though, Jennifer, is the last time you took notes, can you pull up your last minute?
I can somewhere. It's not in front of me right now, but.
Oh, okay. I was just saying it would be the end of your last set of minutes.
Yep, and look at my last minutes.
Yeah.
The organizer next time, then, is Jennifer, right? Because Aisha, this was you this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the moderator.
Oh, here's Jennifer's minutes. Yeah.
Moderator is...
I'll figure it out.
Okay, so organizer should be Jennifer.
Aisha is the
moderator. Naradzu, synthesizer, and Georgette, recorder.
Okay.
Right.
Because it should be the same roles as the last time Jennifer took. Yes?
At the end of, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So wait, who's the moderator?
I am
Aisha.
Aisha is the moderator. Okay.
So I just reported.
I'm still rusty on what I'm supposed to do as a synthesizer. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we.
I think we talk so much.
I don't know. I think it's working, so, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, don't even worry about it.
So it'll be like a day, your day off is with
yes.
the synthesizer. Great.
Okay. Oh, so what are we doing next time? We are going to go under each of the themes and put in examples from our own problems. Yes?
Just like
yeah.
the same question numbers that we did last
mm-hmm.
this week. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe
yeah.
if after we get the minutes from Jennifer, we'll have
mm-hmm.
the themes, and then we can put an example from
each question.
Question under, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about if we put two examples from each of our questions under each of the themes?
That
then we're going to end up with lots of examples.
No, well, we will have two by, well, mine. My second problem is multiple choice, so that doesn't even count. So we'll have two by, what, five questions. So
as it is,
examples.
We're going to end up with four examples for each one. How many do we want?
Well,
I'm just thinking if we have 10, we can...
I guess we can just put more, and if we decide we don't want them, we can just delete them.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't we list them all? I mean, if they're coming up, why don't we list as many as we have, and then we can,
that
you know...
Would be, well, for me,
can
that
pick
would be
and choose which ones. So some of them may be the same. We might end up with the same, then we can just delete duplications.
Right.
Yeah. If it's the same, I wouldn't put it a couple times.
So
unless
you
next to it might want to
all examples?
That seems like...
That's a, maybe two or three.
Two or three. Yeah.
And then,
so two or three examples from each of our questions.
Right.
We're going to put those underneath
each of the
themes, the bulleted
theme.
Themes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, are we going to eliminate my data? Are we going to get
we
rid
just
of
want
it or
you,
not? Yeah.
We just
want to take examples from your group.
So we'll keep it there. We just want to take examples.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And Jennifer, you're going to email us the list of... references that you pulled from the
I am, and yep.
And how many were on there?
Well, probably 12.
Oh, wow.
Now, some of them were, again, they were just, as I was reading through that chapter, I said, oh, well, this is on p-values, and they're quoting directly from this article, so let me pull up that reference.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that, you know, they may be good for us to look at, maybe not, but I will send that to you as well.
I was just thinking that we should probably go ahead and just pick one or two, and you know, each person will read one or two of them.
I'm not sure how easy they're going to be to find. I mean, you.
Okay.
Let me send it out, and then maybe we can talk via email.
Over email. Okay, sounds good.
So once you send out those things, maybe I can, because I like creating tables. Maybe I can create a table that has, you know, this is what it is, this is how we're describing it, and here are some examples.
Okay.
Then that's something.
So we should all send it to you?
No, I will send it to all of us because we're all going to put our examples on there. Then I can just put it in a table.
Okay, and should we just leave out Bob and Andy until we get it together? Or?
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Well, we can give them the minutes of this is what we're doing so they know what
yeah.
we're working on.
Right, and then just leave them out until the end. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
Great.
Okay, ladies.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Dee.
Bye. Thank
bye.
You.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye, you too.
You
bye-bye.
Too.
Thank you. Please stay.